And welcome. And we have a great show lined up for you this morning. We're going to talk about a number of things as we cruise through the morning hours. One of those is going to be about deer. I was just taken advantage of, and I'm going to say right now. So we'll talk about some deer-resistant plants, and I know better.
I thought you said beer.
No. Too early.
Wait a minute. I don't remember that one on our talk. No. I thought you were going to surprise me with something.
Well, let me get up and get acclimated here. I need to work on my enunciation, but I'm going to talk about deer because, oh, dear, I had some issues the last couple of weeks. Also, we'll talk a little bit, Bob, about the weather, and we have succulents on our mind this morning, and our plant of the week will be the good old boxwood, as a matter of fact. So you definitely want to hear that later on today. Also, Bob, next week, guess what? The big day is Thursday.
It is
B-Day.
Can you believe it? Valentine's Day. It's February. Are you going to get Tina something really good?
Always. I have connections.
Do you?
Flowers. I have connections.
Do you go all out for Valentine's Day?
Probably. I used to. When I was on the hunt, how's that? When I was single on the hunt.
I think most guys are that way.
You kept all the good tackle in your tackle box.
You know,
I don't get it out anymore.
I saw a statistic, or heard a statistic on the radio. It was actually on B105 this week, and it was talking about how men actually have a higher percentage of expecting women to do more.
Really?
I found that very funny, because I've always been the one that felt like it's the man's job to kind of pursue the woman kind of, you know, get her something to make her feel special on that day. But according to this, that's not so.
We'll talk about it. Keep that on your plate over there. Keep it on your radar, because we'll talk about, you know, guys, you have to be careful before you send any roses. You better know what the colors mean, and we're here to tell you. So that's coming up here shortly. And also, we have our good friend Tim Mallory from the Advantage Roofing Company coming in with us around the 8 o'clock hour.
Yep.
And, you know, Bob, with all the rain and so forth, hey, there are probably some leaky roofs out there. And this is your opportunity to listen in. And coming out of the winter months, you know, where you have a little bit of snowfall and it just lingers on the roof, and that water just gently melts and it works its way into and underneath the shingles if you have some problems or issues, which we hope that you don't. But, hey, let's be real.
You do. An 8 o'clock hour, that's right. When you're going to want to really check in to see and listen to Tim. So, but speaking of that, do you know how many days until spring? You were talking about spring, you know, and it's February. You know, I start thinking Valentine's Day. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. We're getting closer to March, and spring's coming. And, you know, we kind of got a little tease this week with all the rain. It was ridiculous how much rain we got, but 39 days.
What was it last week? Add seven.
There you go.
So you're just going to
get. It was Groundhog's Day, so we were right in the middle of the winter solstice and the spring equinox. So now we've just picked up another week.
Whoa! Do you want to go there? You were getting all tongue-tied last week with
Punxsutawney Phil
with his statistics. Do you remember those?
I know he was wrong most of the time.
Well, what's the percentage of time that he was correct?
He was wrong. He was correct 61% of the time and wrong 39%.
No, it's just the opposite. You're still tongue-tied.
Did I get it wrong?
He was correct in his predictions 39% of the time.
Okay, you're right. 61. You're right.
I just had to bring that back up.
Yeah, I'm still messing it up.
You're still in last week's mode. That's okay.
I am.
I'm here to help.
I'll be ready for this show in about a half hour.
That's all right. I need to get my cup of coffee yet.
Obviously, I'm not hearing things properly because I thought you said something else when you opened the show.
Well, I'll do a couple exercises here and do my best to enunciate. Yeah. I can get a little lazy sometimes. My wife will tell me that, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just hang in there with me. But I will.
I'm anxious to see about the whole colors of roses. You know, I knew they sort of had meaning, but I didn't know it kind of got this in-depth. So I'm excited when you were telling me all about this.
And, you know, in Victorian times, we'll talk about this, that's how they communicated was with flowers because, you know, sending flowers back in the day, you know, Victorian times, we can thank Queen Elizabeth. Who was it? Queen Victoria, I believe.
There you go.
Victorian times is when that was.
That would be Queen Victoria.
And that's how they conveyed messages to one another. It wasn't proper to tell somebody how you felt about them.
Really?
Yeah. So you.
Well, this
imagine if that was today.
Well, if you go to the usage today, I think some of them don't either. They just text
each other. They text it, right. So they don't want to tell you how they feel. They just text.
They're just going to grab their phone and sit right next to you and send you a text. So.
Good one. Good one. You know, not to switch gears or change the subject abruptly, but, you know, what did you think about that rainfall amount we had the other day? Because really it kind of ties into something we really hammered on last week, and that was winter seeding. And we're going to talk about that, too, because, you know, we're so concerned about what's that moisture level like? What's, you know, all the planets have to be in alignment to really be successful with winter seeding. And when we talk about winter seeding, we're talking about overseeding or getting seed down into the lawn this time of year. So it's dormant seeding. And, you know, we've had quite a bit of rain, and we're still in that wet pattern.
But if you had an area that wasn't really, the soil wasn't prepared well, and you decided to seed, unfortunately, you probably got a lot of movement from how heavy it rained. Water washed a lot of places. There was some flooding. So we specifically, and I'm going to give us some credit here, I'm going to pat ourselves on the back. Last week we said, do not throw your grass seed down yet.
Right.
We said, do not throw the grass seed down. And we did not anticipate that much rain. I don't think either one of us, we knew it was going to rain because we were looking at the forecast, but I don't think either one of us predicted it would rain as heavy as it did. And there's still time to do your winter seeding. So I'm glad people didn't. You know, we had touched on it.
Hang on.
But it's coming, and you may not catch the last snowfall. Maybe we don't get another snowfall. But we're going to have some colder temperatures where the ground still freezes and thaws overnight. So those are going to be some of the times. So, yeah, we got a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, you know, and today, hey, enjoy today. A little sunshine, high around 32, 34. I'll take that all day long because just the other day, it was so pleasant in the greenhouse. And this is the time of year that I really get stoked. All the new stuff's coming in. We're working on getting things changed around. And just to enjoy that nice warmth in the greenhouse with a, you know, pair of jeans on, like a light long sleeve shirt. It's comfortable.
It was warmer yesterday in the greenhouse than it was on the cloudy 60-degree days because of the sunshine. And it felt wonderful in the greenhouse yesterday. I mean, it just did. And for us, we're getting excited because next week, our first round of annuals start arriving for us to plant.
Oh, yeah?
And the hanging baskets start getting planted next week. So we are real excited. To me, that's when spring arrives. I know I said it's 39 days, but for the nursery people like you and me, when some of this foliage is and flowers and all the stuff starts coming.
All the vegetative cuttings and so forth.
You just get a little excited, you know. And I don't know how you do it because, you know, last week I was very fortunate, and I'm going to brag on my good friend Tony. I got my wife an incredible bouquet of flowers from your place. So they were absolutely incredible what I got from Jackson Florist. So if you're looking for something for Valentine's Day, I'm going to give you a plug. Go to Jackson's,
well,
go see Tony.
And so, we'll talk about that when we come out of the break. How's that?
Yeah.
I want to ask you, do you have any Valentine's Day ideas coming up that you want to do something special with Elizabeth? 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. We got to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about V-Day next Thursday. Don't forget, guys. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And if you're just getting up and joining us, I'm having my first cup of coffee. Hopefully you are. And if you want to check us out, certainly go out to our Facebook page. That's a great way to stay in touch with us. And also, if you would like to email us or ask us a question about anything that might be going on in and around your house or out in the landscape or something you may want to do this upcoming spring, certainly feel free to send us an email at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. And also, you can certainly go out there and catch a past show on our podcast. And, you know, if there's anything you want to talk about or anything that you want to do this year, 2019, certainly feel free to give us a call. We can help you with that. And before we went into the break, we're talking about next Thursday, Bob. Next Thursday is the big day, especially for those people who are still in love or just met or been married for a number of years. Do you do anything with Elizabeth that's special on Valentine's Day?
We used to do a lot. I mean, we used to do a lot. It was fun, you know, and then kids kind of come around. You get busy with everything, and we don't do as much as we should. But, you know, I still usually, one of her favorites, and I, you know, she loves the cookies from the Bonbonnerie. So up there in O'Brienville. So loves them. So they're little cutouts. So I usually would go get a dozen of those, you know, and try to get any sort of flowers, and then I would bring her some flowers. But, you know, she's been working out real hard. She kind of laid the law. I'm not supposed to do that this year. So
I've got to
think outside the box. Now, I can't tell you what I'm doing just in case she goes back, because I know she's got the mm-hmm. app so she can listen to the podcast,
mm-hmm.
and she would know what she's getting. So, but I have thought outside the box. And, you know, sometimes it's not always about the cookies and the candies. Sometimes it's about the thought, you know. And I think women like the thought of guys putting some energy and effort into it. So
got it.
I've got to go. I've got a little digging to do, and I got a little work to do. But I've got 4 days, 5 days.
You know, boy, it's been a long time since Tina and I have done anything for Valentine's Day. We're always working. So, you know, and after the day, it's been a long day. It's been a busy, hectic kind of day. And it's a fun day, too, you know, from our perspective when we're on our side of the counter and a lot of the guys come in and they pick up flowers to take home. And, you know, obviously, I mean, women love getting flowers. They really,
Does
really
Tina
do.
Does Tina love getting flowers?
Well, at this point in our lives together, we both work with one another.
And she works with flowers all day.
What am I going to do, call somebody else up and have them sent to us?
Right.
I can't do that.
You're going to have her make her own?
No.
Because, I mean, let's face it, that arrangement that I got the other day was absolutely gorgeous. Had some Oreo lilies in it, some Gerber daisies.
I think you had a little bit of a spring bouquet kind of a mix.
It lasted forever.
Well, there's a key to that, and we'll talk about that as well. But what Bob's referring to, he was in, what was it, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, two weeks ago.
What was the occasion? I forgot.
It wasn't.
Just because.
I was just being romantic.
Just because. And let me tell you this always gets you a couple of bonus points, you know,
no,
guys.
It didn't. We've been married for 24 years.
Send flowers to your significant other, and when you do it, you send it to them at work. I am telling you, the workplace lights up.
Yes.
The recipient, hopefully your wife or your girlfriend, you know, not that you're married and you have a girlfriend. You don't want to do that. That gets you into a lot of trouble.
Or you better.
I'm just
saying. That's a whole other topic for a different show.
That's right, brother. That's a whole other topic. But when occasionally I'm out, Bob, helping with deliveries,
mm-hmm.
I happen to have a delivery that might be going to an office. And when you walk through that office or you go into the front door, all the ladies, I mean, it's almost like, you know, just everybody pops up and are looking over their cubicles. Oh, who are those for? Who are those for?
Right.
And inevitably, you know, I always hear someone say, you know, my husband used to send me flowers. He hasn't done that in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why is that?
So what is the most popular for you guys? Is it still red roses?
Well, red roses for Valentine's Day, Bob, are probably the predominant choice. And, you know, according to the Society of American Florists, SAF, guys typically buy red.
And why do you think they buy red? I mean, I know why I think I buy red.
Well, red is symbolic from the standpoint that it symbolizes love.
Yep.
And affection. And I think that's where that really lies. So, you know, guys typically they buy red roses. And the truth of the matter, some of the studies have indicated that women prefer to have colored roses. Multicolor,
really?
Yeah, you know.
Mixes,
maybe just yellow, maybe just, you know, pink.
Yeah.
But guys typically, you know, like I said, red's the predominant color choice, you know, when it comes to Valentine's.
Right.
I like the lilies, you know, I like the lilies in combination with roses, you know, that red and white look.
Sure.
You know, some of the white lilies.
Clean.
You know, just anything that's floral with those fragrances and that look. You're definitely going to light up somebody's day. That's for sure. And, you know...
So if you were getting Tina some, what would you get her? I mean, she can go in the back room and get what she wants, but what would you get her?
Probably a pink rose.
Okay.
And the reason being, because pink has a couple of, you know, common threads there, what it means from a symbolic standpoint. And usually that gentility... mm-hmm. Elegance, refinement, femininity. So I would probably get her pink. You know, not
you
that
can't
I don't
go wrong with pink.
No, you can't go wrong with pink. You know, not that I wouldn't get red. I think she already knows that, you know, I chose her as my spouse and we're married and I love her, obviously. So I don't think I need to send it in another color.
Gotcha.
What about you?
You shouldn't assume. You shouldn't assume anything. You know what happens when you assume. That's not a good thing.
Well, wait a minute. Yeah, we get in trouble when we do that.
Yes, we do.
But if you were to send a caller, what might you send?
Well, that's a very good question. But you know what? We got to get ready to take another one of those breaks
so
that we have to do. So you
got
to hold on, and so do the listeners. So,
all right.
Yeah, so hang in there and stay with us and grab your favorite cup of coffee. And if you got a question or something you want to talk about, feel free to give us a call. Hook up us on Facebook or send us a message or give us a call here at the studio, 749-B105. We'll be right back.
The color meanings of roses. And, yeah, we'll talk about, too, on how to preserve those roses and how to keep them for a long time. You know, in addition to other flowers, maybe you might not necessarily want the rose or will be getting roses. But I can also certainly tell you how to prolong those and keep those looking as nice as long as possible. But, you know, as we were running down and talking about some of the roses and so forth and some of their color meanings, the yellow rose, if you're not really quite sure, if you just maybe perhaps met somebody, that might be one that you would certainly want to consider sending, Bob. And that is just for the reason of it just kind of conveys warmth, gladness, and affection.
Yep. More of a friendship type.
More of a friendship kind
of
thing.
Yeah, so if you got somebody you're interested in, but more friend style, you know, and you want to get them something, yellow might be a good
right
one.
Now, have you ever met somebody and it's like, oh, man, they kind of smothered you? Didn't you say Elizabeth was kind of like that little...
Of course.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
All the women are smothering on me. I mean, that's just what happens. So you didn't know me back in the day. I was a smooth operator.
Chick magnet. Cruised, if you remember, over in Northern Kentucky, Dream Street.
Hey, another funny fact about Bob is my mother-in-law one time told my wife, who I was dating at the time, that I was a smooth talker. I took that as a compliment. I thought that was a good thing when I was 20 years old.
I always thought someone would call people like that like a devil with a silver tongue.
There you go. I haven't heard of that. I just thought smooth talker was really cool. I'm like, yes. But, you know, going into the break, though, you asked me what I got Elizabeth. You know, and I've done roses before. Typically, I always did red.
Right.
But one of her favorites is the Stargazer Lily.
A lot of people like the Stargazer Lily.
So the fragrance is incredible.
Right.
Now, sometimes those little pollen things, though, you know, when they start getting in there in the house for a little while, you know, can get that little orange powder and stuff on them. Is there anything you could do to kind of help having a problem with that?
You know, I try to pull those. And if you pull those just at the right time as that lily, you know, the bloom starts to, you know, it's a pretty sizable bud.
Yeah.
And, you know, after a couple of days, it starts to slowly and gently open up. And once it opens up a little bit wide enough where you can get your fingers in there and pull that pollen out.
You did that on mine from 2 weeks ago.
It comes out rather easily, and it comes out where it's not really messy.
Right.
And I do that for a purpose because a lot of times, you know, it can get messy, one. And two, there are, you know, people who are allergic to those kind of things. You know, there's allergens that are associated with the pollen.
And you're really trapping them in the house.
Yes. So I try to remove those, and you can do those. You know, you can do that yourself at home. Just a little tip. Right before they start setting up, and it's not really, you don't get it on your fingers.
Right.
But there are times when you can, you're right there at the cusp as it starts to turn into that little fuzzy pollen ball.
Yes.
Then you'll have it all over your fingers.
Well, that's where I usually get it. That's why I asked, what can I do with that? Because when we do have them in the house for a while, you know, if I even walk by them and I get too close, it gets all over you. Now, you also gave me a tip a few weeks ago on how to preserve some of those flower arrangements and something I could do. So, what is some of that you could share with our listeners?
A good way to do that is to I like to do this about every 3 days. I like to change the water out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just real simple. So you take the vase and you'll kind of use your left hand or whichever hand's the dominant and hold the arrangement and just tilt it over in a sink and let it drain out and fill it back up. And you can also, this is why I say go to your professional florist, is because you can get these little floral preserve packets.
Do they work?
They really do. They really help tremendously. And by changing that water out like that and you're keeping it clean really helps prolong your flower arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And never add those packets to something that you just received, you know, on a delivery for, you know, so to speak, because we're using those preservatives in the water when we're making those arrangements.
Oh, so those are actually used as you change the water.
Right, but there's a whole process when we receive flowers. We get a lot of our flowers right out of, you know, directly out of Miami, Florida, that come up out of Central and South America.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in boxes, and then we have to, you know, open up those boxes. We have to cut the flower stems, and we'll process those with another product, you know, and kind of a... You know, something in buckets, you know, with warm water to help get them rehydrated. And then immediately after they're hydrated, we put them back into the cooler and we'll keep them at about 38 degrees.
Okay.
So those temperatures are the essence. And that's why you want to go to your professional florist, because we know how to process the flowers. We know how to take care of the flowers. And we're going to help you extend that flower life as best we can once those flowers make it to your table at home.
Do you think it would also be a good idea as... You know, after a week, maybe 10 days, maybe a fresh cut on some of those. Does that help?
Yes, you can do that too. And also with your roses, I always like to cut all of our stems at a 45 degree angle because what that does on the, you know, just like trees and so forth, the vascular system of our cut flowers, you know, is so important. And when you cut it at a 45 degree angle instead of straight across, you have a larger vascular system.
To draw more stuff.
To draw more moisture. We'll talk more about that. 749B105, because this is really interesting. And it really does make a difference, you know, how you preserve your flowers and keep them from a longevity perspective. We'll be right back for the big day next week. That's Thursday. That's Valentine's Day. Hey, and if you have anything you have special going on with your significant other, if it's just... You know, going out to dinner, if you pick up a bouquet of flowers and take home, or if you're sending them to their workplace, share that with us.
Hey, share. I need some ideas because I can't do flowers because she's going to pot, you know, a ton of hanging baskets, like 1,000 hanging baskets this week. So she's going to be all flowered out. I can't do cookies because she's been working out so hard and she wants to, you know, try to stay fit. So she doesn't want to have all that stuff. So that leaves out the box of chocolates, which you never can go wrong with that. So I've got some ideas, but if the listeners could help me, I need some different ideas.
Bob, I can help you too.
Well, I need some ideas. What should I do?
But here's my question. You know, and this is kind of a funny analogy, and I always kid Tina, my wife, about this. You know, it's like, you know, how come you don't do this? How come you don't do that? You used to when we first met. Well, that's because I put all of my good tackle up. You know, I used to go to the bait shop when I was a single guy. I'd go to the bait shop and I'd buy the best lures, the best fishing gear and equipment.
Yeah.
And it's all in my tackle box. I haven't opened that up in a long time. I don't need to open it up. How's that? Right.
You know what? You could surprise Tina.
Maybe I'll just.
You could surprise Tina.
Yes.
But if there's anybody out there, if you don't want to call in, share it on our Facebook page. Give me some ideas. I need some help. We got 5 days.
You always need help.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I sit on this side, and you're over there in the big chair.
No, my chair is just like your chair. Just I keep it up high. Anyway.
So we were talking about preserving flowers.
We were. And, you know, and sometimes, too, when you have that bouquet of flowers and it's in a vase, just, you know, and I don't want to sound funny. That's what people say, vase, however you want to term it as being. You know, occasionally just emptying the water and replacing it every 3 to 4 days really helps prolong, you know, the longevity of those blooms. And some flowers, the longevity of some flowers will last longer than others. And one that comes to mind in particular, and it's one of my favorites, and that those are irises.
Oh, yeah.
Now, irises, when they open rather quickly, and they'll open for 2 to 3 days, and then all of a sudden the show is over. But still, just because it's a, you know, a short bloom period, don't let that deter you. I love irises. But irises are one of those that you will remove, you know, first for the most part. Now,
how long will they last?
The iris?
Yeah.
2 to 3 days.
2 to 3 days.
Yeah, maybe okay. Longer. It varies.
So it's a good to add as into the arrangement, make it the arrangement.
No, exactly. I love irises. You know, if you're looking for something for longevity, Ostromeria kind of has these trumpet-shaped kind of blooms. The longevity on Ostromeria is incredible. If you're really looking for something for fragrance, look for stock. Stock is very fragrant. Comes in a number of colors. And when you first pull it out of the coolers, our display coolers, or we're pulling out of the coolers where we store our flowers and start working with stock, you don't quite get that fragrance. But as they, you know, the temperature, the outside temperature starts to warm up the flower bloom, they become more fragrant and intense. I mean, not to the point where you can't stand it, but they are.
So if wonderful. I put it in the kitchen, kind of as the centerpiece for a short time around the table,
yeah,
I'll smell it.
Yeah.
When you walk
yeah,
in the house.
It's really not overbearing.
Is it as strong as a Stargazer?
No, not quite as strong as a Stargazer.
Like a Stargazer, yeah, you walk in the house and you, doesn't matter what store you walk in, you go, there's flowers.
Right. There are people that will call in and order flowers and they will say right off the bat, it's really funny. It's like, I don't want Stargazers because they're too intense, or I don't want lilies.
Right.
You have the Asiatic lilies, you have the Oriental lilies, and they're both very nice and attractive. And, you know, the Orientals are more fragrant.
Sure.
And, also, this is interesting, too. A lot of people are like, I don't want gladiolus because it reminds me of a funeral. I love glads. I wish more people would order glads. And when we buy them, we got a bucket of glads, right. But or a hamper, I should say. But, you know, it's one of my favorites, and you can grow those in the landscape as sure. A summer bulb that you'll buy.
You got to bring it in, though.
You have to lift those.
Yes.
Yes. And, so, you know, those are just some of the flowers I can think of right offhand. I love the hydrangeas. So there's a number of things that you can do.
Besides roses. Roses are probably the most common.
Roses are the most common. You know, delphinium is awfully yeah. nice, too. It's a lot of times when you're buying flowers for men in particular, you know, you want more of a masculine kind of thing. Think about delphinium.
Yep.
You know, that's a great cut flower. Also, the Gerbera daisies, the colors are incredible.
I had some of those in our arrangement from you. They were great. They lasted a long time.
They do, and it's a huge bloom. And you'll see the Gerbera daisies. You can grow those, and you can buy those during the spring season and summer season from your local garden centers
yep.
and nurseries. So those are wonderful. They're great cuts.
They are great cuts.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that you can do. And last but not least, before we get on to another topic after we go to the next break, I also want to point out there are differences when it comes to roses. And there are such price differences when it comes to roses. And a lot of times you'll see these roses advertised on TV or perhaps on some radio stations that are like $16.99.
There's a reason.
There's a reason, okay? There's various grades of roses. Mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you that. And, you know, when you buy roses, you can usually get them in three common sizes, what we call a 40-centimeter rose, that is the length,
okay.
Also a 50-centimeter rose, and the 60-centimeter rose.
Now, those are long, long stem roses.
That's right, Bob. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the 40 centimeters are what you typically see. Those are the ones that are advertised, and, you know, they're really inexpensive. I can sell you those. And so can some of the other florists here locally in the tri-state area. And there's nothing wrong with the 40-centimeter roses. But I will tell you this. They are cut earlier than the other roses.
So they're not going to last as long.
Well, they can.
Yeah.
But they're not allowed, you know, they're not allowing them to grow to taller heights and develop more of a bud.
Gotcha.
Okay. So they're smaller buds.
Okay.
The blooms, when they open, they aren't as large. So there are some differences there. And if you're looking for really good roses and you're at a florist or wherever it is that you're looking at roses, just take your index finger, your middle finger, and your thumb and pinch the base of that rose
mm-hmm.
and look at the guard petals. When you're going to remove the guard petals, which will open up, you know, and you'll see the inside of that rose, which is going to ultimately open up. And that's what you're looking for, a nice, firm rose. And that's how you tell a good rose. And if you've ever had a problem with roses where the heads, Bob, just droop over. Please call your local florist or wherever you purchase those and let them know, because what happens is the vascular system had been disrupted in some shape, fashion, or form. And a lot of times when you're like taking your pocket knife and you're dethorning roses, you're disrupting that outside layer
sure.
and that disrupts the water flow up into the head. And that's what typically happens.
So that's when there's just a problem from the beginning.
That's what you'll see. But anyway, we'll touch more about Valentine's Day later in the show. And
have you heard the big news from Graders?
You mean about the black?
Well, no, I didn't hear the big news from Graders.
I did not hear the big news from Graders. I didn't know there was any.
We'll find out what that is.
We'll try to figure it out.
Well, we got to take a quick break. 749-B105 in and around the house. When we come back, I'm going to tell you I was just eaten out of a house and home the other day by deer. So we'll talk a little bit about some deer-resistant plants that you might want to consider and some things that you can do to keep those pesky guys out of the yard. We'll be right back.
I don't think a lot of it.
Probably low to mid-30s. I'm okay with that because I'm going to be in the greenhouse and it's going to be feeling really, really, really good. Unlike when you're in a greenhouse, it doesn't feel good when you're in the month of July and August.
Man.
It's brutal.
Have you noticed that it seems like if it's warm, it's raining? And if it's cold, it was sunny yesterday, it was gorgeous, but it was cold. I just want the warm and the sun. Can I have
here,
it?
Kitty, 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 kitty.
I know. I'm asking for too much in February.
You're killing me.
Man, but I'm looking at like the 10-day forecast. I see rain, lots and lots of rain.
That's what concerns me. But today, you know, I'm going to take it. I like the sunshine. And here's something else, too. You know, days like today, if you're kind of, you know, I'm not encouraging you to go and shop for plants today, but you can certainly find something for inside. But get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, because right now, things are coming in. You might find us, you know, busy little bees working, getting things set up and so forth. And you might find and see pallets of stuff, spring stuff arriving. We're just getting into it. We're getting it all out. And now's the time to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Take a stroll around, see what's new, kind of start chumming up with some of your nursery staff members, and get ready for the upcoming
season. Make sure you check hours, though, for a lot of people, because this time of year,
right,
some people have limited hours. Like, we're a little bit more limited, but when we get to March 1st, you know, then we start back to normal, you know. So, because a lot of us, and you're part of this, too, you know, we don't like the winter months because they're slower, it's cold, there's not a lot going on, you know, and it's a tough industry to be in this time of year.
We're starving right now.
Right. I mean, it really is.
Absolutely.
You know, but we also kind of enjoy the little bit of break that we get because, you know, and I know you're the same way. I mean, when we get to April and May, I mean, it's easy for me to work 80 to 100 hours a week. I mean, that's actually pretty easy to do anymore. And, you know, but that's the way it is.
So you find your fuse is awfully short by the time we hit June.
It's funny you say that. We used to laugh because it seems like the more you're in the business, mm-hmm. the more resilient you are and the tougher you are to those problems. So, yes, it used to be like April. I would be very short with people, you know, end of April. Then it got to May. Now it's June. I can almost get through June.
So give me. So you were short with people in April?
Well, like late
That's
April.
That's early, Bob. You can't be short of people.
See, you know.
Hold on. How many hours are you working in April? It's got to be.
In April, we work 7 days a week.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm taking stuff home, and I'm working from home, and I'm working at the shop, and I'm up early, and I'm doing all that. But that was when I was younger. So now that I'm, you know, I'd say the last 10 years, things don't really bother me that much, because I've also realized it's just stuff. They're just plants. They'll be fine.
That's a good answer there. You always have to have your game day face on. Your best attitude, no matter how bad the day is,
people
don't want to see the bad day.
Gardening's great. I mean, that's one thing we all have in common. All our listeners, you, me, all our local leaders, the people you hear on the show, we all have the same thing in common. Gardening is great. It's sometimes difficult, and it's challenging, but it also is very rewarding, and it's also, I mean, let's face it, in the middle of summer, when your annuals are perfect, and your flowers are gorgeous in your house, and you pull up to your house, and everything's perfect. Don't you just love it?
Oh, absolutely. That's when you can, you know, just go home after a long day at work and relax.
Except
and it makes you feel good.
This time of year, sometimes you get some critters that kind of mess up that tranquility that we have.
And that just happened to me the other day.
Yeah.
And I just shook my head, and I'm thinking, you know, just think to myself, you idiot, why did you plant that? And the plant, the shrub that I'm talking about is the Fire Chief Arborvitae.
I love that. Your salad bar.
It was a salad bar. And, you know, I don't even know if deer truly enjoy eating that plant because there were a lot of pieces on the ground around the plant itself. And I'm like, you know, if you're going to take a bite, finish the bite.
Or leave a tip.
Leave a tip.
And then they leave a tip and pay their bill for their plants, but they don't ever do that either.
And I've not had deer issues in a long, long time. But
you haven't done that much work in your backyard.
No, but I'm working on it. But I know better, and I'll tell you why I know better when we come back out of this next break. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. And what can you do to keep these guys away? It does work. And if I listened to my own advice, I wouldn't be talking about the problems that I had the other day. And I'll tell you about them more when we come back. We're a lot of ground. We've already talked a little bit about Valentine's Day and so forth. And don't forget, at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, our good friend Tim Mallory from Advantage Roofing Company will be joining us. And if you have any issues with any leakage or maybe some damage or missing shingles or an aged roof that needs to be replaced, the shingles have been on there for some time, you know, definitely give us a call. You're going to get some free expert advice. And Advantage Roof has done some work for me personally, and I can attest to it. You will not be disappointed, only satisfied. They do a clean job, and nothing around my landscape was ever damaged. And it was, for me, for the most part, it was like I didn't even know they were there. But I had a nice new roof put on. So hang out with us to the top of the hour. Also, before we went into the break, we were talking about I was eating out of a house and home the other day. Some of the new plantings that I planted last fall were munched on and munched on and munched on by the deer. And we're going to talk about some deer-resistant plants. And I know, and I knew going into it, that the arborvitae is kind of like on the salad bar for the deer. And I just need to use some of the deer-resistant or, you know, deterrent type of products that are available to you from the local garden centers and nurseries. And, Bob, you have any favorites when it comes to that, using some of those deterrents?
I do. I do. One of my favorites is Deer Scram, the granular version. It's a deer and rabbit repellent. It's a granular form. And I tend to find, especially with some of the rains that we've had lately, the granular forms last a little longer than the liquid sprays. Now, my trick that I always recommend to any customer who's buying it, any friend, wait, anybody.
Is this a trick?
It's not a trick, but it's just a hack.
Okay.
Okay? So you got to mix them. You got to use two different ones. So okay. I like to use my granular deer scram, and then I will use a liquid spray. I'm not as concerned about the liquid spray. Sometimes liquid fence works really well. Deer off.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be this one works. I haven't sold that one in a little while.
Well, that could be one of our segments. Where are they now?
Where are they now? This one works.
The old Fertilum deer deterrent, it worked.
It did work, but I haven't used it in a while.
I haven't seen
it. What I'll do is I will recommend, in the summertime, it's not as big of a deal because there's so much for deer to eat. They tend to not bother unless you have hostas or it's kind of a regular place that they go to. But, you know, especially when we start getting into fall season, you know, and I want to protect some plants, I will rotate those. So I'll start with a granular form. In 30 days, I'll do a liquid form. In 30 days, and I'm rotating those just to really keep them off their game.
I really like the deer scram, and you'll find that at your local garden centers and nurseries. And I like the deer scram for a couple of reasons, just like you, Bob. One is it comes in three different sizes.
Yep.
And when somebody comes into the garden center for the very first time with a deer issue, I steer them in that direction. I want them to buy the small, like, shaker applicator version of that.
Yep.
Okay?
And they have two types. They have the shaker plastic bottle.
Right.
And then they also have the little shaker plastic bag. Is that the yellow one?
I don't like the bag. The bag might be a couple of dollars less in price.
Right.
But it's not
as easy to apply as the shaker bottle.
It's not. So that's why I like that little, you know, shaker bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for is once you start having success with this product, inevitably you're going to be back in to buy the refills, and then you have the applicator. So that's why I take you to that little shaker can. And it's real easy to use. If your deer problem is kind of mainstream, kind of, you know, what most people experience, where it's not, you know, you're not overly populated or inundated with deer in your area, you know, the way you apply this product is it's a barrier, and you'll kind of shake it out at a 16-inch to 18-inch wide swath around the areas, the shrubs, the beds that you want to protect. And, excuse me, you'll do that. And if it happens to rain, you'll have to reapply. But once you get on that program, it's going to become very effective. And what you're essentially doing is this. You're changing the deer's eating habits and patterns. If they're accustomed to coming to your yard early in the morning and eating at Tom's house or Sally's house before they go down to Tim's or Bob's, that's the path,
right.
That's their path to work, so to speak. It's like you stopping in Dunkin' Donuts or your favorite little coffee shop before you go to work every morning during the week and getting your caffeine fix. That's what deer are doing. So you want to change that habit. But once they come to your yard and know that you have a nice salad bar.
Which you had on your Fire Chief Arborvitae.
Which I had on my, absolutely.
A lot of people have with hostas.
With hostas, and they get accustomed to that, and you're trying to break that cycle. Now, I don't know. There are people who will also that will go to barbershops or hair salons and get hair. They say that that's effective. I've never used it. I can't tell you if it is or if it isn't. Also, Irish Spring soap. People will take that approach.
I can tell you for a fact that a customer of mine has used that, and we planted, this is going back 20 years ago, and we planted a ton of trees for him. And the birches, for some reason, they were really kind of going after the birches when they were little.
Really?
And so he hung some Irish Spring up. So he drilled a hole. He cut them into smaller pieces, and then he would drill a hole, and he'd take some shoestring, and he just kind of hung them up in the tree. They looked kind of silly, but it actually did work for him.
Interesting.
And I've heard it hasn't worked for others, but it's the fragrance. It throws them off, and they're like, something's wrong.
Well, it kind of puts them on high alert.
Yeah.
And that's what those products do. And the only time I ever see where some of those deer products, you know, like Liquid Fence and Deer Scram, aren't necessarily as effective is, you know, some of the younger fawns and so forth, they don't have that sense of danger yet, you know,
right,
or something's lurking or there's a change in the, you know, what it is that they're smelling.
In the environment, yeah.
Yeah, in the environment. So you're trying to change up those habits. I've heard of people also, Bob, using like fishing line, the filament,
yeah,
and just running it throughout because they can't see that, and when they hit it, it startles them.
Yeah, well, that, for some of the ones that are on the deer superhighways who have massive deer issues, you know, I've seen them use some netting, especially in the fall, you know, on their hollies. You know, I had one lady, and she kept a black netting. You couldn't really see it.
Right.
And it was in there all the time just because she loved holly, but the deer were constantly getting to them. And like you said, it was kind of on their way to work. They were walking by it every day. And so it deterred them. They still got to it if they wanted to eventually, but it did work. But some of these products, when it rains hard, you got to reapply. You know, I think the deer scramble lasts 45 days. Well, that's in perfect conditions. When it's raining that hard, it's not going to last quite as long, don't you think?
Yeah, if like some of the rains we've just recently had,
yes,
absolutely, you have to reapply. And you know what else is good about deer scram is that it works in snow.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't have an odor. Like, I like Liquid Fence. Liquid Fence. If you've anybody out there has ever sprayed Liquid Fence, you know the smell. It's horrible.
It's wicked, but once
don't
it dries,
spray before a party.
You won't smell it, but the deer still will.
Yeah.
Do you have any plants that you kind of suggest to homeowners that
you know? I do have a few, and you know, obviously, there's always the basic ones. You know, boxwood, which is, you know, going to be our plant of the week. We'll talk about that. Juniper. There's a lot of evergreens, but I was kind of thinking. I tried to go outside the box and think of some different ones that maybe people don't think about all the time.
Yeah,
that still add some interest. And one of my favorites is the forsythia.
Okay, especially early in the spring.
So early spring gives you the yellow flowers. It's one of the first things to bloom. Can get rather large. And a lot of times your deer issues, you know, you're finding them in woodsy settings. So you're trying to create somewhat of a nice landscape. Maybe you removed a bunch of honeysuckle, but you have an area where you kind of want something. And with forsythia, you can get so many different sizes. You can get dwarfs. You can get full size. You can get ones that get huge. Also, if you have a hillside, they work really well for erosion, you know, in the woodsy settings because they'll grow in the shade. But as they kind of attach and they get big and they fall to the ground, they'll actually start a new plant. They'll eventually root in.
Got it.
And they can kind of cover that hillside really, really well. Plus, it's the perfect indicator of when you're supposed to put your pre-emergent down. Or your step one.
Got it. So you're using it for two reasons.
Yes.
Got it. I like it. What about, you know, something we talked about in a past show, Calocarpa, the Japanese beauty berry. That's deer resistant in the landscape. Rue, aromatic rue, low growth. That's the one I still want to put down in my yard. I have room for it.
Beautiful color in the fall with all the berries. You can't beat it. And the fall color, I think that's a yellow foliage. Isn't it the kind of yellow? It's not gorgeous
kind of
on the foliage.
Yellowish, orangish.
Yeah, it's not gorgeous. You're buying it more for the fall berry, but I love the beauty.
I think you're talking about the beauty berry. I'm sorry. And the Grolo Sumac.
Yeah.
Yeah, the beauty berry, more of a yellowish color.
Yeah, okay.
It can kind of turn
Sumac's
a little,
orange.
It'll get a
right?
little, yeah. It'll get a little, sometimes it'll get a little different hue in it, yeah. The beauty berry.
The Sumac, I love the fall color.
You know, Buddleia, the butterfly bush.
Yeah, it was on my list.
That's not a favorite of the deer.
No, and you know what? That's one of those that are always a little tricky. You know, because I love the dwarf butterfly bush. But sometimes, you know, we get that late winter, like we did last year. You know, you lose a couple, or they're really slow to come out. Mine didn't actually really start doing anything till July.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I got them in June.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got one for you. I'm going old school here. Potentilla.
Oh, I think that's an ugly shrub.
Yeah.
Oh, Bob.
You know, it's funny. You know, Tony says
people,
you
said some people that like Potentilla. I think it is just downright ugly.
So Potentilla is really pretty when it's blooming, and that's about it. My father-in-law used to cut it down all the time because he thought it was a weed when it wasn't in bloom. I mean, he used to take his mow, he just mow right over it. And my mother-in-law, she'd be like, he did it again. He cut it down. But you can't help it because it kind of looks like a weed.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But the deer won't eat it.
No, they won't. They know it's ugly, too. You know, what about, let's take it into the shade garden, because most people, if you have shade, then you have a woodland kind of setting for the most part, mm-hmm. I would think. I mean, you could have shade in between houses, obviously.
So you get deer in full sun, but they're usually more in the woodsy setting.
More in a woodland setting. You know, I think ferns are a good go-to.
Ferns are excellent. Right. We have done that so many times. Mm-hmm. And you can use all the varieties.
Yeah, and we're talking about perennial ferns. These are ferns that come back every year, and certainly they're not on the deer's palate.
No. And you can, I have planted hundreds for people.
You have a favorite fern? Perennial fern?
It depends on what I'm trying to do. If I'm trying to really fill something, I love the ostrich fern because its size.
Mm-hmm.
I love the autumn fern for the color. I love the Japanese fern. If that one's sometimes a little bit more temperamental for me.
Why is that?
I just think it's got to be in the right spot. Sometimes it's not as hardy as some of the green ferns.
Hmm.
Now, I'm not saying it's not hardy because it's a good one.
I've had really good success with it.
Right.
So it's been very, very reliable.
The green ones, definitely. The ostrich and some of those and tassel ferns, they tend to do. I mean, they just, once you put them in, they usually take
them. You know, one I don't see that I think is very, very interesting, and I don't know if it's because it's difficult to get started or grow, is the cinnamon fern.
Yes, we've carried those before, you know, yeah. And it's an interesting plant.
You don't see it too often.
No.
I don't know if there's a reason for that. But as those fronds start to come up and unfurl, you know, you got that cinnamon kind of look mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful one. Yeah. Now, to go to another plant, let's say you got a sunny spot, you know, and you've got an area where maybe it's the side of the house, you know, and the deer come from the woods somewhere else to track through to get to a neighbor's.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget about the lilacs. Lilacs usually are pretty good. You know, I don't have any trouble with those. And the dwarf lilac, the common lilac.
Right. I've never had problems with deer bothering the lilac. You know, and I'll tell you, you know, from a perennial standpoint, I'm gonna throw a plant out there that, you know, you almost just want to lay down and put your head on it like as if it's a pillow, and that is Artemisia silver mound.
Silver mound.
I love silver mound.
Mm-hmm. The deer won't eat it.
No, they won't eat it. And two, if that particular plant ever gets a little kind of ratty looking, you can cut it back and it responds favorably. And silver mound, it's just that. It looks like a real little low growing soft pillow,
right?
And really adds some decent highlight, I think, to the garden or to the landscape.
Have you ever had any customers where one customer had great success with a plant and maybe others have had problems?
All the time.
You think of one off the top of your head? I knew I threw something new at you. We didn't talk about this. So.
Oh, what would come?
Because I've got one. And mine is black lace elderberry.
I like that plant. You know, that was supposed to be the poor man's Japanese maple a few years ago.
And in the right spot, it is. But, you know, I've had some customers where it's gorgeous because the deer won't eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have other people who maybe are two houses down and the deer munch it. And I cannot explain why. That's a plant where you just put it in. You may have great success. You may get in trouble.
And keep in mind what we're talking about are deer resistant plants, not deer proof.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, you purchase a new car and you get that new Scotchgard on the fabric on the seats. You know, stain resistant. That's exactly. I guarantee if you spill wine on it, it's in it.
Oh,
you know, that's how I look at it. It's resistant, not proof. And you know, when you get into those cold winters, I mean, it was a few years ago. I mean, we talked about hollies last week. When deer eat hollies in the winter,
yeah.
I mean, you know, they got their little pointed edges on mm-hmm. some of those.
Some of them are really sticky.
The blue hollies. Yeah. I wouldn't want that on my tongue, but they're eating those.
Right. If they get hungry enough, it's kind of like us, you know. You know me, I'm not the best eater in the world. I'm kind of picky.
Oh, you're on that Joe Weider shake mix stuff.
Yeah, my protein shake. Don't make fun of my protein shake. But, you know, there's times where if you're hungry enough, you'll eat. You know, I don't love sauerkraut. And I know some people listening go, ooh, you don't like sauerkraut. Everybody loves sauerkraut.
I'm sorry that you don't like sauerkraut.
You love it, don't you?
I do.
You know, but if I was hungry enough and there was nothing else to eat, I would eat sauerkraut.
That's probiotics right there.
Yeah, well, that's, you need it.
Yeah.
All right, I got another one for you. People don't commonly use. I'd love another plant for that area. Japanese caria.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you don't hear people talk. That's one that's kind of underused.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That one's got the green foliage. I love the stems. Actually have a little light green color to it, so they're a little bit interesting when the leaves are off. They do come with the yellow flower. Mm-hmm. I particularly like the kind of the one that almost looks like a double yellow. It's kind of a little bit puffier. They'll grow in a ton of shade. The deer won't eat them. They do get a little weedy looking, especially if you just sort of plant them and don't do anything with them. But I love that plant, and it's not used very much. It's one you're not going to find all the time in the garden center. But if you have an area where you want something blooming, you want something different, you're going to be really happy with the Japanese caria.
You know, you don't see that too often. Can it be a bully? Can it be a little invasive?
A little, but not much. I don't find it to be too bad. Not in our area. I think if you're maybe another climate south, you might see it spread a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I found with our clay, it's at least the ones I planted, it's just not much.
That's probably one of its attributes. You know, it's not very particular or fussy about its soil.
Right.
And like you said, shade. More of a natural kind of look in the landscape. So, yeah, where'd you pull that one from?
I told you, I was bringing you a list of things you don't think about. I still can't believe you ripped Potentilla that bad.
Oh, I think it's one of the ugliest shrubs out there.
Can't believe it. So,
Bob, I'll rip you for that one for a while.
That's all right.
We have to take another quick break. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. And let's switch it up a little bit and put it into gear and talk about how about succulents? You know, that's one of the hottest things going. And when we come back,
could make a great Valentine's Day gift.
It could. There's a gentleman that posted just that on our Facebook page. That's a great way to stay in touch with us as well. But we're going to go back to the Facebook page after we come out of the break, because there are a couple of plants that were kind of a hit at the TPIE show in Fort Lauderdale this past year, and that's a Tropical Plant Industry Expo, and they're kind of neat, and you'll want to check it out. We'll be right back. From the standpoint, a lot of sunshine, so just rub it all over you. We're not far away from spring, as Bob was saying. How many days, Bob?
39 days.
39, and it will come quickly.
Let's hope so.
We'll be right in the thick of it, and before you know it, we'll be right in the middle of summer. And just like everything else, it just goes by so quick and speeds up as we grow older, unfortunately, but hang in there. It's not too bad out there. We'll warm up.
Yeah, we'll warm
up. That's for sure. And while you're out on a break, we have a gentleman it's calling in here, and it's Jamie. Good morning, Jamie. How are you? Jamie, you there? No, I think we lost
him. We lost him. He can call back.
I think Jamie's question was, when we were talking about Valentine's Day, who would we recommend as florist that maybe he can order some flowers from? That's a great question.
Well, I would recommend Jackson's.
Well, obviously, I'd recommend this too, but also as a part of the Cincinnati Flower Growers Association, there are some of us in this group that have florists, and we have garden centers, and I just want to name a few. And support your local businesses. That's extremely, extremely important, and you're supporting businesses that are the cornerstones of your communities where you live, and we always say this as well. On average, 67 cents of every dollar that you spend locally will stay in this economy here locally. In comparison to if you buy from a big box store, there's nothing, I'm not hammering the box guys, but only 41 cents stays here. So how would you rather have it? I know that I always want more in our community because we're the ones that get to enjoy our communities. But going back to who I would recommend, if you're over on the west side of Cincinnati, Ron Robin, a great friend of mine from Robin's Florists and Greenhouses, I would certainly give those guys a call. Definitely a quality florist, and they have been in business for a long, long, long time, and that's what you want to look for. And you go over in the Silverton area, just with Tim Clark the other day, we were on a trip checking out some things, and Beankin, H.J. Beankin, florist and garden center. They do a wonderful job. Also, over in Northern Kentucky, you have our shop, Jackson Florist and Garden Center. If we can help you with deliveries over on our side of the river, we will certainly do that. And, you know, you also have in Campbell County some good friends of mine, the Messmer family from Fort Thomas Florist. Certainly give those guys a call. All four of us belong to the Cincinnati Flower Growers Association. And, you know, it's a tight-knit group of people. You guys are in it, Bob.
We are.
And, you know, we're all friends.
We don't
friends.
Do the floral stuff. But,
no, you don't do
you
the
know,
floral stuff.
It's just kind of nice to bring a different side of things.
Absolutely. So, Jamie, I hope that helps you out. And when you buy from your local florist, I can assure you, you're going to get a quality rose, a quality flower, a quality arrangement, and it will last for some time. The longevity is there. So, and it can certainly help you with ideas.
We need, speaking of ideas for Valentine's Day, you know, I need help from our listeners. You know, my wife really doesn't want flowers. You know, she doesn't want cookies and candies. So I need some ideas. We're 5 days out. I have ideas, but I'm, now that I've talked about it on the air, I'm kind of stressing out a little bit.
What about a massage of some sort or pamper her or something?
That's it. I need some ideas. So if our listeners could hit us up on Facebook. If they,
like a manicure kind of deal,
that'd be a good
all that
one.
Stuff. Women love that stuff.
She does. But, you know, I don't know. So I need some ideas.
There you go. Well, maybe somebody might.
Hopefully somebody will call in or at least send some on Facebook.
I hear you. But before we went into the break, we were talking about the hottest thing going from a plant standpoint, and this, you know, I'm not even going to say it's a trend. You know, a trend is kind of something that comes and goes, but this is here with us to stay, and those are succulents, Bob. People love succulents.
They do. They do. So when you say a succulent plant, though, how would you explain that to someone? What does that mean? I got you on the spot.
Something that does well in arid conditions, doesn't require a lot of maintenance, a lot of water. Succulents, you know, by definition, it's a plant that's abundant in juices, so to speak. And a lot of our succulents, I'll give you an example, the jade plant.
Right.
It has a real thick, fleshy kind of leaf to it.
Mm-hmm.
And those thick, fleshy leaves have a unique way of storing moisture, and they can go a long time without, you know, being watered. You
right.
need to water them. Don't get me wrong, because they'll tell you it's very evident. When succulents get a little dry, those leaves become a little kind of wrinkly. They'll shrivel a little bit. They'll get smaller in size. That's an indicator they need a drink.
And they're easy to grow. So if people are looking for something easy, I think succulents are pretty easy to grow.
That they are, because they don't require a great deal of attention.
Right.
And they are the craze, you know. Why succulents? Because they're awesome in containers.
Yep.
You can also, you know, you can plant them outside, but most of your succulents, with the exception of the sempervivums, the hens and chicks and so forth,
right.
you know, they're hardy. The sedums are hardy. Some of the agaves, they're not quite hardy where they would winter over totally outside, but they can take some low temperatures.
But they can take some pots, and then you can bring those in
right.
for the winter.
Right, you can bring those in. Aloes, everyone's familiar with the aloe.
Mm-hmm.
But they provide us with many, many uses in the garden. You can use them around stone walls, in some instances and cases, between patio pavers and rock gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, often enough, if you're coming down through the cut in the hill on 75 and you're traveling northbound and you see the new St. Elizabeth facility right there, there's a rooftop garden with succulents.
Yep. So there's some really cool things you could do with succulents, though. I mean, so, you know, let's talk about maybe some indoor stuff, because these are actually great for indoor. Some of these little ones are, you know, we'll have on our windowsill right above the kitchen sink, you know, and they're right there. They add some color. They mm-hmm. add some interest. But, you know, you can put them in little planters and make a little display out of them. They actually work great in little terrariums. You know, if you want to do something along those lines, little plant terrariums, you know, you could have some fun with that.
Mm-hmm.
They make little great little wedding ideas. If you're looking for something maybe for a wedding, like a little small centerpiece, or you just want to give a gift away, you know, it can be something that they take with them and have for years. You know, so there's a lot of cool things,
you know,
with that.
Speaking of weddings, I have something to tell you and add to that, but we have to take another quick break. And I'm sorry about that, but 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. We're going to talk more about succulents And they are the hottest craze going. I'm telling you that. And you need to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries that carry succulents and dig right in. And we're going to tell you more about those. And I'm also going to tell you something about what you were just saying when it comes to weddings and succulents. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we've been covering a lot of ground. We were just recently talking about succulents and so forth. And we're going to come back to that, and we're also going to direct you to our Facebook page. We're going to talk about a couple of interesting succulents that are kind of taking the industry by storm.
They are cool looking. You need to go to Facebook, and you need to check it out, period.
They are cool.
Unless you're driving. If you're driving, don't check your Facebook right now. But if you get a chance, then go back and visit our Facebook page, you know, and like our Facebook page.
Definitely. So. And we'll talk more about that in one moment. But I believe we have Shannon with us on the line. Good morning, Shannon. How are you? Is it Shannon? Is that right? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Oh, okay. How can we help you? What's going on?
We've got a terrible mold problem in our yard. Mm-hmm. And we know that it's probably coming from a area in the neighbor's yard in which they just have a ton of vegetation, like on a hill, so that it doesn't have to be mowed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really doing anything, and that's probably where they're coming from. But it's destroying our yard.
Yeah, moles can be, you're saying moles with an M, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the past couple of years, I don't know why, and Bob, you can chime in any time, it seems like I've seen more mole activity than ever before. And Shannon, really the most successful way to really go after moles is using traps. And one of my favorite traps, and you know, a lot of times when I start talking about traps with customers that come into the store, I get this like, ew, you mean I have to dig it out of the ground and touch it and throw it away? Yeah, kind of, but it's not that bad. But, you know, you have to ask yourself the question, do you want the trouble to continue, the destruction? You know, I mean, they're not going to kill anything. It just makes things look a little unsightly. But there's a trap out there called the Mole Eliminator. And actually, it's manufactured over in Indiana. And that has been the best trap to date that I have personally used. And it's like a scissor trap. And Shannon, it is very, very easy to set. And you'll find the main run. Now, this is what the key is. As moles tunnel through, you know, and you can only catch them with these traps when they're tunneling up high. Typically, during the winter months, they're a little lower, deeper in the ground, and a little bit more difficult to get, so to speak. But you'll want to step on a couple of the runs just in places and come back out about every 30 minutes and monitor that. And those runs that popped back up is usually your main thoroughfare, okay? Those are the runs where you're going to set your traps. And I would encourage you to buy two. And they are a good investment. And then you can rent them to your neighbors in the neighborhood. I'm just kidding you. But you will have them for a long time, and that is where I have been most successful. And Bob, chime in.
They are worth every penny.
Right.
I mean, by far, I've had a couple customers. I loaned a few out that I said, hey, if you want to try it, try this. If they work, come in and pay it. Come and pay me. That's what I actually had a couple of them where I said, if it works, if it doesn't work, bring it back to me. I'll take the trap back. If it does work, you come and you buy it. He came back in a couple months later. He's like, this is the best thing I've ever had, and he actually paid for his trap.
And you'll be successful. Now, there are some other ways to deter if you don't want to go the trap route, so to speak. There are some other products out there that are like the castor bean, castor oil related, and they are granular products. And Fertilum puts one out called Molgo, and you can certainly spread that out on the lawn surface or in the landscape bed surfaces, and as it breaks down. There are a lot of people, Shannon, that swear by this product and say that it's effective and that it works, and that's just exactly what it does. It kind of runs them, and maybe to your neighbor's yard. But once that starts to wear off, then usually you have the problem coming back. Now, I've never used it to give you my personal testimonial, but others have told me they've had success with it. But I prefer the traps.
Okay.
So, you know, what garden center are you close to? Where are you calling in from this morning?
Fairfield.
Stop up and see Jim Montag at Lakeview. Are you familiar with Lakeview Nursery?
It's a mile down the road.
Yeah. Stop in and ask Jim and, you know, see what he has on hand there in the nursery and let us know how it goes. Be patient, okay? And
okay.
Once you start catching them and, you know, throwing them away, you just mark a little kill. You know, you just take a marker or a piece of chalk and just, you know, you just start chalking it up and you'll be like, yeah.
So they don't really go off the roots of, like, the garden plants?
No. Moles are insectivores, so they like insects. They like, you know, earthworms. They like grubs, of course. You know, other insects that they can, you know, that they scurry for when they're tunneling. But primarily, those are their two favorites. And you know, don't spend any money on stuff that's really, you know, it's what I call snake oil or smoke and mirrors. You know, the poison peanuts, again, moles are insectivores. They don't eat peanuts. I only had peanuts when I'm at the bar and drinking a beer. So stay away from those kind of products. There are also some of those. There's one out there called Tomcat that they're little baited gel worms that you can insert into the tunnel runs. I've heard of people having success with those. So let us know how it goes. Stop up and see Jim at Lakeview and certainly follow up with us. Okay, Shannon?
Great. Thank you.
All right. Have a great weekend.
You didn't say juicy fruit.
No, I didn't say juicy. You know, no, there are people that swear by
it. I know there are people that swear by juicy fruit. I have never tried it.
I hear that all the time.
Yeah, the mole scram, I've had customers use it and it works well. You know, what's the other one? Castor oil, Molgo, I think by Fertilome.
Molgo by Fertilome.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, so that was a pretty good one. So, you know, moles, we could talk about moles all day.
Not the ones on your skin or your face, you know,
but
talking about the ones that are running through the landscape beds.
Yeah. But before we went to, you know, the break and we got to moles, we were talking about our Facebook page and the succulents, because those are some of the cool succulents. And I know we got to take a quick break. So in the break there, if you get a chance, go to the Facebook page and check out the couple succulents.
And we'll definitely get to those when we get back.
Yeah, we have to.
749-B105 in and around the house. Get up and enjoy this day because there's going to be a lot of sunshine. High in the mid to up, you know, up lower to mid-30s, I should
low
say.
Low 30s.
Low 30s, and I wanted to take it a little higher.
I know you do. And, you know, who knows? Maybe the sun comes out at last
like
a little
you and Punxsutawney Phil. And that ratio, how accurate.
Getting all excited. Settle down.
All right, we'll be right back. It's because at the top of the hour sometime there, our good friend, Tim Mallory from Advantage Roofing, will be in here with us. And, boy, we've had a lot of rainfall, that's for sure. And if you've noticed some wet spots or marks up on the ceiling or have had some issues inside the walls of the house or some leaking issues, definitely give us a call. Tim's the guy. They've done a great job for me personally, and I can certainly attest to that. And hang out with us. Tim will be with us sometime around the 8 o'clock hour, like I said. And before we went into the break, that was a great question, too, about moles. You can go on and forever in a day and talk about moles. And the best thing to do is just trap those guys, Bob, as far as I'm concerned. But we want to direct you now to our Facebook page. There's a couple of newer succulents. We're talking about succulents and that were really highly talked about and touted at the TPI show, and that's the Tropical Plant Industry Exposition Expo down in Florida that happens every January. And one of those succulents is called Monolaria opconica. Say that and use that in a sentence.
Yeah, I'm impressed. You got that one really good.
Yeah, the next one I'm going to butcher, but Monolaria opconica is a succulent that looks like a pair of green bunny ears.
So it looks like a peace sign.
Yeah, or it could be a peace sign.
Yeah, peace, bro.
Yeah, your index and middle finger. Kind of really neat in a good way, not the middle finger the other direction. But
it's cool looking.
They represent, I mean, they look like green bunny ears. Really, really cool.
And being a succulent, it's still easy maintenance. You know, it doesn't take a lot of care, but it really could add some interest. And also, it could just be, you know, even something people walk in your house and see, you could talk about. I mean, it really is that interesting.
That it is. It's really cool. And now the other one is even cooler. I mean, they're both neat. And that, if I say this correctly, is Senatio peregrinus. And that is what they call the miniature jumping dolphin. It looks like these little dolphins jumping. And it really does.
It does.
It really does. And these are the hottest, most sought-after succulents that I'm hearing people talk about. And the thing of it is, when newer plants are introduced into the industry, there's not as many readily available. And then when you start getting this high demand, production can't keep up with it. And it's, you know, just like trees, and it's just like shrubs, and it's just like perennials and annuals. You know, it takes a couple of years before you really start seeing these guys. But these are really neat, and just kind of want to share this with you. And they are the buzz of buzz when it comes to succulents.
They are really cool. So going back to succulents, though, mm-hmm. somebody's going to go pot those. Is there a particular soil or anything or watering type? How do you want to take
that? That is one of the key things that you really need to take into consideration and steer away when it comes to soils. Steer away from the 99-cent bags of topsoil that you see a lot of because that stuff is just muck. It stays too wet, and that's not the environment or the soil that you really want to put your succulents into. You really want to use more of a succulent mix,
mm-hmm.
okay? Which Fertilume has come out with a new succulent mix, and mine just came in yesterday, and I've yet to look at it, but there's a lot of buzz and talk about how good that succulent mix is. And I'm not just saying that because we're sponsored by Fertilume. Fertilume puts out some really good products, but you're also looking for like cacti mixes. Those are kind of done up in such a way, Bob, where they have plenty of, you know, there's a little bit of perlite in them, some sand. It's a heavier base, kind of, it weighs more when I say heavier base. But it allows for better water permeation and drainage, and that's what you need, and that's what's so important with your succulents, because they have the canny ability to kind of retain moisture in those thick, fleshy leaves, so right. they don't need that much moisture. And if you overwater them, good night, Irene, because that's going to be their demise more than likely, and it does not take them long to go south
yeah.
if they stay wet too long.
Yeah, you don't. These are one of those plants where you want to water thoroughly, and then let it sit for a little while. Let it dry out. You know, and also I found out because these mixes do allow the water to permeate through, you know, sometimes when we take ours to the sink, kitchen sink, you know, we'll water it and let it sit there a little bit because it will leach through. So if you don't want it all over or you don't have a saucer or you don't have a way to capture all the extra water, you know, sometimes you might have to do that with some of these.
Absolutely. And, you know, just a little tip, if you're not quite sure if your succulent needs a drink, wait another day. You know, certainly not going to hurt it by any means. You know, if you're not sure, but always use your index finger. Sometimes lift the pot up. If the pot's really light in weight, it kind of gives you, that's an indicator that, you know, it could use a drink. Also, take a look at the foliage. The leaves,
there you go.
They'll shrivel a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They really, really will shrivel. And, you know, that's an indicator. Don't let them go dry too long because some of your succulents will bloom for you as well. And that's a whole nother topic in itself, and I don't want to, I got a lot more to add to succulents, but if we continue the course, Bob, we won't get to our plant of the week. And when we come back out of the break, we're going to do just that. We're going to talk about boxwoods. And, you know, boxwoods are the staple of many, many landscapes. And, no matter how you slice and dice it, I don't care how tired you might be of hearing the word boxwood, they have their place. 749-B105. In and around the house where Tony works, we'll be right back. To turn a corner and go into the spring, I enjoy the temperatures inside the greenhouse this time of year. Unlike when we get into July and August, it's like, whoa, you want to lose some weight? Hang out in here.
Yes.
But it's most comfortable now. And the reason why I'm saying that is because most of us who have garden centers and nurseries here in the tri-state area, we're working frantically getting things turned around and bringing in new merchandise to give you a look at this upcoming season. And stroll around today. You know, take a little drive to some of your favorite garden centers and just see what's going on, see what's coming in. Obviously, it's a little early for plants, which is not a big deal. So just, you know, take it in. You know, the pottery's starting to arrive. And, you know, even most, you know, more importantly, if you like to start a lot of your own seed and garden that way when it comes to vegetables and those tasty tomatoes, right now is the best selection of seed on the seed racks for those of you who like to do that and take that approach. And it's always fun. It's rewarding. And that's one of those things, Bob, where you can really get kids involved with gardening. And that's one of the best ways to do it is to allow them to sow the seeds, just see the whole process of sowing the seeds when they start to germinate, as their little young seedlings, taking care of them and transplanting them and so forth. It's a process, and it's a learning tool for little kids. And even better, midsummer, when you start picking those ripe tomatoes and they see the end result of the harvest of what they sowed, this, you know, you reap what you sow, that's a perfect way to do it for little kids. They enjoy that.
Yeah, you know what, and that's something maybe we can talk about next week or the following, you know, and bring back to the show some of the different seeds and how to take care of things. And,
absolutely.
You know, I think that's something we should definitely put, you know, not on the back burner,
maybe next week or the next couple of weeks we need to be talking about that.
And so
it's just a little too early. Don't jump the gun, because a lot of times, 95% of the time, you start them too early inside, they get a little leggy, they start stretching, and all of a sudden it's not that plant you're trying to grow.
Right.
But that's a whole other topic, and we'll be talking about that when time is appropriate. So just keep that in mind, but get out and look for the seed. That's what we want to encourage you to do.
Right.
Before we went into the break, boxwoods. I love boxwoods, and I have a Green Mountain boxwood, which is a pyramidal type of a columnar type of shape. That it's an upright grower that is as tall as I am, and I'm 6'4", and it is 23 or 24 years old, Bob, and it is a beautiful specimen.
And it's still just gorgeous. A great plant, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It just grows.
Every landscape should have a boxwood or two in it. What do you think?
I love boxwoods, you know, and I know some are hardier than others. You know, there's no doubt about it with our area. That's something you definitely want to look at, because when you're ordering some boxwoods, there are some varieties that aren't as hardy here.
I have one for you. Since it's Valentine's Day next Thursday, probably there are a lot of guys out there that are going to go to the jewelry stores and they're going to pick up a diamond ring and get engaged.
Ooh.
Okay? Which leads me to ask you this question. I've heard of this particular boxwood. I've never ordered it before. It's a variegated variety. Okay? It's low-growing. It has glossy green foliage and a lime margin that gradually, from what I understand, turns gold as the summer progresses, and it is called wedding ring. Have you heard of that one?
I have not heard of wedding ring.
I have not.
You got me there.
So it's a variegated variety. It's up to 4 feet in height, and it maybe a 3 foot spread.
Hmm.
You might even see it a little bit lower.
What is the zone on that one? Do you remember?
I don't remember the zone on that, to be honest with you, but I will check that out. But it's just one I read about, never had it, you know, and that's one of the variegated forms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if some of those variegated varieties, I know there's some other variegated varieties, if they happen to get beaten up a little bit, you know, if it is, in fact, too cold. But I did not happen to see the zone on this one when I was reading about it. And it was just briefly. You know, I was just kind of going over some things. I thought it had an interesting connotation to it. Wedding ring and with Valentine's Day coming up.
Yeah,
it
kind of fit right in there.
Yeah, I thought it did.
So, you know, some of the boxwoods variegated that we have in our landscape, they are zone 5, a lot of them. But sometimes I question whether that's true or not. Because some of the variegated I found really struggle a little bit in our climate. And I'm just wondering, you know, sometimes if they stretch that variety and say, hey, it'll grow up to this zone, you know, but do they really? Because I like the variegated boxwood. It's a good plant. It just sometimes you got to realize it's going to struggle.
Well, it's a different look, too, especially if, you know, and that's why I like the boxwood. I think it's so versatile. You can plant it in sun, part sun, part shade. And this particular variety, you know, anything that's variegated always pops in the shade, you know, with those lime or there's that light kind of creamy edge margin on the boxwood. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that wedding ring is a zone 5. Now, have I been able to put my hands on that particular variety? Remember last week we threw it out there to some of our listening audience that, you know, have you ever internet ordered? You know, and we're like, why would you do that? This, you know, this might be one of those cases. Are these easy to get and come by? you know, I can understand that element of things, but support your local garden centers and businesses if you can. And you certainly come in and ask us, hey, can you procure this for us? Can you get this for us?
Mm-hmm.
Because we, you know, when you run across something different, my ears will perk up. And, you know, I'm just as interested as you are because, you know, I love gardening. I love plants. And probably I'm a plant geek. But, you know, I just think that these are interesting to say the least. And looking at different varieties sometimes, step out there and give them a shot.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and one of my varieties, and it's a go-to and it's pretty standard, but I feel is very winter hardy here and does really well. It's going to get about 4 feet tall. It gets a little bigger. Is the Winter Gem boxwood.
Yeah, you know, I kind of thought you would say Winter Gem. It's very popular.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. And then so there's an element that, boy, some landscapers might, you know, they might tar and feather me when I say this. You know, it has an open habit to it. You know, if it gets a heavy snow load,
yes,
I worry about that. But other than that, I don't think, you know, it's
if you trim them tight, they're pretty good.
And it stood the test of time.
Right. Now, there's also one out there called Winter Green.
Mm-hmm.
Now, personally, I have had a lot more winter damage on my Winter Green than I have the Winter Gem, to where I won't carry in the garden center the Winter Green anymore.
Well, Winter Gem is considered the hardiest, mm-hmm. one of the hardiest of the boxwoods. So I can see it, you know, definitely being in favor.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a little bigger leaf to it as well. I think that's what makes it attractive. And I've had customers who have had great success with that one and containers because of its hardiness.
Right.
And large containers. And it's beautiful.
It's big. It's durable. It's tough. You know, any boxwood can get leaf miner and a few things, but that's all treatable.
Right.
And if you do a little bit of work on your boxwoods, they can be in good shape. They can be healthy and they can be happy.
Oh, that's the key.
And there's a couple different types of boxwoods. You kind of got your English boxwood, your American boxwood, you know, your Korean boxwood,
mm-hmm.
Japanese boxwood. There's a few different ones out there, but you really get that. This is where it's real important to get, and we've said it a couple times on the show, get to your independent garden centers and talk to those guys because we're the ones that are going to know what does really well in this area and what doesn't. Just like I talked about the Green Gem, I bet I heard back on more than half of those getting some severe winter damage
mm-hmm.
year upon year upon year to where I don't want to bring that in for a customer who's going to have a bad plant. So
right.
I'll switch them to the Winter Gem, which looks
right.
just the same, but
right.
it's a hardier plant.
You know, are you familiar with Justin Brower's, the short dwarf, for one of the short dwarf varieties? A lot of people like those two for like larger size window boxes.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're in that window box environment, you might get a couple seasons out of it because it's kind of protected. You know, it's in its own little microclimate, but also it could be its demise, you know,
absolutely.
That freezes out too quickly. But boxwoods are certainly a mainstay in the garden itself. And we're going to tell you how to keep your boxwoods looking nice and healthy when we come back out of the break. And then after that segment, we will go to our good friend Tim Mallory. I believe Tim's arrived, and we'll get him set up. And we'll talk about some issues if you're having anything going on with your roof. I know that I need Tim to look at a couple things for me. Hang in there with this. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We'll be right back. If you're just getting up and joining us, thank you. And just poke your head outside. Just seeing the sunshine. If that's not uplifting, I don't know what is. And it just, when I see the sunshine, Bob, I kind of get a little more motivated when it comes to things around the garden center. And you just can't wait till the upcoming spring season finally arrives.
Great. You come help me.
I'll do that. I wouldn't mind coming up and helping you a little bit if I had the time. But before we went into the break, we were just briefly, we were talking about our plan of the week, boxwoods and so forth. And, you know, Bob, key in on some things that are very essential in growing boxwoods and being successful with boxwoods.
Well, one of the first thing I think when it comes to the having a good boxwood is, first of all, getting a good variety. You got to get the right variety for our area because there are hundreds of varieties of different boxwoods that we can't have, but there are a bunch. So I think picking a good variety is one. Two, it's making sure that you plant it properly by adding some peat moss or compost manure when you plant.
Mm-hmm.
Three, it does require some pruning. Once a year, you should prune these. Now, you can use hand pruners. You can use some shears. If you use the gas shears, make sure they're good and sharp, or they will tear, and then all of a sudden you'll see a lot of browning on the edges.
Do you have a preference time frame when you like to prune boxwoods?
I usually like to get those sometime in June, just right after the new growth has come, kind of shape them up, and then sometimes you'll get that second round of growth that'll kind of fill it in a little bit. So if you cut too deep, you'll get that extra round of growth, so it kind of hides and camouflages some of that.
I think some people have a tendency to prematurely prune boxwoods. And I'm like you. I like to let them put on the new growth and flush out, harden off a little bit, and then I can allow that shrub to get a little bit of height to it, and then I can restrict that.
Have you ever found yourself trimming them twice?
Yeah, later in the season I will.
I'll hand prune the second time just to clean them up, just to make them look good. Because you know how important my Christmas lights are. So I can't have a bunch of wild boxwoods and then have my Christmas lights getting hit in.
Now, you mentioned something with shears. I don't like to shear them. I like to get in there and hand prune and be selective about how I prune. Open them up. I like to open them up a little bit.
Right.
I find just getting some air down inside that boxwood and a little bit more light, I get better growth.
And my favorite way is actually to shear, but hand shear.
Exactly.
So use the good long-handled hand shears, and actually that way I can control exactly what I'm doing. But, you know, what I love about boxwood is you can make them round, you can make them oval, you can make them square, you can make them oblong-shaped. If you're talented, you can turn it into a topiary.
A little English in you,
if you want it to.
A little formal kind of guy.
But, you know, there are some maintenance you also need to do to your boxwoods. And I like to use the drench every once in a while on my boxwoods.
This is where I'm in favor of the drench. And we talk about using things responsibly when it comes to insecticides and so forth. And the systemic drench that Bob's talking about is the one in particular from Fertilum. It's a systemic drench for trees and shrubs. Really easy to use. And this will get into the plant via the root structure. And it works its way up through the vascular system into the upper part of the plant. And will protect it for up to 1 year. And especially against, you know, the leaf miner. Gosh, man, is that a pesky fella for boxwood?
They'll be out again. Everybody has boxwood has a really good chance of getting leaf miner.
At some point, you
got to treat it.
Right.
You got to treat
it's
it.
Like
now,
a house with termites. You know,
you're not going to treat that now.
Termites and don't.
Yeah, you're not going to treat it now.
No.
If you treat your boxwoods now, you're absolutely wasting your money. It's not going to do anything. It's not going to draw up into the plant. I don't like to really treat these until about late April.
I like to do it after they bloom. You know, they get that little bloom because, you know, they are attractors to pollinators. So we're being a little bit more responsible from that standpoint. And, you know, rest assured, it's going to keep the psyllids out of play and the leaf miner. And that's critical. So the other thing is, too, fertilization.
Yes, definitely. And I love the Fertilum Start and Grow. You know, it's one of my favorites. It absolutely is a great fertilizer. It will feed for 3 to 4 months, so the entire growing season is taken care of. You can just do it once and walk away.
That's good. And adequate moisture, just the right amount of mulch, and you do those 4 or 5 things, and you will have nice, healthy boxes.
Yeah, they're pretty easy to take care of.
And you'll have them for a long, long time.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take another quick break and get our guest settled in. That's Tim Mallory, owner of Advantage Roofing. And Tim has done some work for me personally. And it was exceptional. And with all the rain that we've had, this is your opportunity to chime in and get some questions answered for you and some things that you want to look at if you're trying to determine if you need a new roof or not. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. And we'll get our guests settled in, and we'll be right back. Outside because the sun's coming up, and it's beautiful. We're going to be in the low to mid-30s today. And I'll take that any day of the week, especially with all of the rain that we've been having. And next week's weather pattern kind of pretty much has pretty much the same headed our way as well. And because of that, our good friend Tim Mallory from Advantage Roofing, he is the owner of Advantage Roofing, and he has personally done some work for me, and I have been so satisfied. It's great work. I don't need to say any more. And like I said, because of the rain, Tim, are people starting to start, you know, having some issues with water seeping and finding its way inside?
Yeah, for sure. So what really brings out leaks is a long, drawn-out rain. So not necessarily a thunderstorm here and gone, but these long 8- and 10-hour heavy rains really start to pull some leaks out.
And that's just what we had the other day. I mean, it was periodically. It would come, it would go, it would come, and it would go. And I remember personally when my roof was starting to age and get a little too old, inevitably you start seeing those little marks up on the ceiling, you know, or along with that, I mean, that's obviously a telltale sign. What are some other things that homeowners need to look for, you know, when it comes to a roof starting to near its lifespan?
Sure, sure. So a couple things. Number one, winter is really tough on roofs. When you get, there's an adhesive that holds one shingle to the other. As a roof starts to age, it starts to get brittle, and the cold starts to contract that shingle, and it can cause a lot of damage and make those shingles start to loosen on the roof. So one of the main things you need to look for is an uneven roof. So just stand back a little bit into your yard or as you pull into your driveway and just take a look up there and say, you know, does things look like they're laying flat or does something look a little odd? So that's the first thing I would say. And there's sometimes you can see, I've had people say, hey, I found pieces of my roof in my front yard. So just any sign that looks abnormal.
You know, I've also noticed on roofs occasionally where they look like they stay wet for a period of time in certain spots or certain areas. Is that one of those potential trouble spots?
It could be, yeah. So a lot of times that's where maybe a roof, an upper roof will drain from a downspout to a lower roof, or it's just that it doesn't get a lot of sun. But, yeah, the especially in these long rains, the water will, if it's an older roof, soak into that shingle and eventually get into the attic space just going through the shingle directly.
You know, do valleys come into play with that, too? Is that a problem during the winter months? Because if you have the metal valleys, or you had told me one time before, there's the old weave. What do they call that weave?
There's an old weave, but we do something called a cut valley.
A cut valley?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those can be issues also.
Do they, because it's metal and the temperature changes, especially with the fluctuations that we've had, is a lot of that stuff moving?
For sure, yeah. So what happens, the shingles kind of flex at a different temperature than the metal does on the roof. So you can definitely get some buckling around that, around your chimney flashings. Any place there's metal and shingles or brick, everything's going to flex at a different temperature. So you got to really look for anything that's starting to raise up or buckle.
Same with ridge vents. You know, what, do they have a tendency to move? I mean, I've seen before where ridge vents, you'll see some of those nails kind of raise up and out.
Yeah.
Is that part of that process?
Yeah, the old style ridge vents were aluminum, and they would do that a lot in the wintertime. So they would raise up, they'd pull the nail head out. Now they do what's called a shingle over ridge vent, and it's actually the ridge vent goes down to a 3-inch nail, and the shingle cap goes over top of it. So that stops all that flexing or any chance that the wind catches the ridge vent. So it's a nice product. But if you have the old metal ones, keep an eye on them.
Keep an eye on them?
Yes.
Bobby.
I do.
You.
I have the old metal ones.
You were talking, well, earlier when we were in a break, you were talking about your roof. How old is it?
It's original. It's 17 years old, so it's
Ooh.
Getting there.
Tell him, Tim, is he getting close?
Well, we usually say around 17 years, 18 years, you need to have it inspected. Just have a roofer come out and take a look at it. Because depending on if it's the original roof from the original builder, it's likely not a great high-quality shingle.
I'm sure it's not.
So, usually in year 15 or 17 on a new construction, you're looking to probably get it replaced in.
So what are some of the shingles that we might want to consider if we're to put a new roof or have to put a new roof on a home? Have they gotten a lot better in recent years, and are there styles that are kind of trending?
Yeah, so that's a great question. When I started 32 years ago, there was really just one choice. It was the old three-tab shingle, so 36 inches. Every 12 inches, there's a tab on it. And that wind resistance on that was about 50 or 60 miles an hour. If you move to nowadays, the shingles are so good and so advanced, and they're called dimensional, where there's just kind of a slab of shingle with pieces laminated on top, that wind resistance is now up to 120, 130 miles an hour. So it's really, really come a long way. The price hasn't gone crazy on it. And there's been a lot of good changes in technology for them.
Bob, this is a true story, and I've told this before. Back in 2008, we were at the Arete show up in Jersey, and that's when Hurricane Ike kind of swept up through the Ohio Valley.
I remember.
We had some of those 80-mile-an-hour winds. Before that took place, Tim had just put a new roof on my house, probably a week and a half before. And we discussed the dimensional shingles and the wind resistance and so forth. And when we came into Cincinnati, this is a true story, all I saw as we were approaching CDG were blue tarps
everywhere.
And I kept thinking, Tina told me it was really windy, et cetera, et cetera. And I kept thinking, gosh, why couldn't I have just waited another 2 weeks? And we'll talk about this with insurance claims and so forth. But rest assured, I have not. That was back in 2008. That's how long I've got. Well, I started the show here in and around the house in 11, but been wanting a roofing company, and you primarily, and finally you came on board with us last year. Thank you, by the way. But, Bob, they held up.
Yeah. Yours was fine, huh?
They were fine. But the dilemma for me was, it's like, daggone it, if I would have waited, maybe I could have had my insurance, because everyone's shingles were just blown all over the neighborhood.
Yeah, but you might have had other damage, too, so it's good you had it done.
You're right. I was glad it was done, and that, for me, holding up to those winds when you guys installed that was testimony that, you know, you guys know what you're doing. And I remember seeing you guys in the neighborhood, how clean you were. That's why I called you.
Yeah.
My neighbor down the street, you guys were doing work for her. It was a ranch, and you were in, you were out. It was clean. And the same with my house. So, again, thank you. But I know they held up, and I can attest to that.
Do these new shingles, do they hold up to the hail damage and some of the other elements better as well?
Good question. They are just now, there's a company called Certainty. They're a great shingle manufacturer. And they came out with a shingle called the Northgate. It's been on the market about a year. And they're really the first hail impact resistant shingle in this market. And we put it on quite a few times. They are expensive, but they really hold up to us walking on them, so there's not a lot of granule loss when we walk on them. Mm-hmm. Even in the heat, we put one on, it was 102 degrees or so. We quit at lunch. But, you know, working up to that point, usually you've got to be super careful to not scuff what we call scuff a shingle. These held up like a champ, and they're hail resistant. The cool part about it is homeowner insurance are starting to recognize that hail is a big issue, mm-hmm. and it causes a lot of cost to insurance companies. So they are now giving discounts for these hail impact resistant shingles.
Really?
Yeah.
So what makes it different? So explain to me, when the hail hits a typical shingle that we're all most accustomed to or have on our homes, what's actually happening when the hail hits it?
Yeah, so you got to go back to how a shingle's made. So a shingle's made, they start with a piece of fiberglass now. They used to start with paper. Now they start with fiberglass. They impregnate that with asphalt, and then they put bitumen. It's a mix of bitumen and asphalt on both sides. And then while it's hot on the top, they kind of drop these granules, which is slate or rock or ceramic, into this hot tar, mm-hmm. and it kind of pushes it in, and that's the basis of a shingle. Well, when hail hits it, it dislodges those granules, and it also can fracture the shingle itself and cause problems. So what they do, they've really beefed up in the technology of the different ingredients that goes into the shingle now, mm-hmm. makes that granule adhere to that shingle so well that you can't hardly get it off. So when the hail hits it, the granules stay in place, and there's no damage to the inside of that shingle.
Is the cost of that shingle, percentage-wise, a lot more than your standard shingle?
On a typical home, it's going to sound expensive, but on a typical home, mm-hmm. it's about $1,000 more. However, it's a 50-year shingle, and the homeowner's insurance is usually about $150 discount a year. So after 8 or 10 years, you've recouped that money back, and you've got a really, really good shingle on your home.
And a peace of mind, too. So if it really holds up like that, I mean, why not?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you combine that with 120, 130 mile-an-hour wind resistance, that shingle's going to be on a long time.
Wow. You know, I always wondered, like, how can you tell hail damage? So you do that for people, too. Homeowners, if they say, hey, you know, they call you up at Advantage Roofing, and Tim, or can someone from your company come out, take a look at my roof? I might have some damage. So walk us through that process, and how can you help with, you know, insurance claims, if in fact it needs to be claimed.
Sure. So storm damage is an interesting part of our business now. It really wasn't back, you know, 20 years ago, but it's become probably 60-70% of our work now is insurance claims on it. One thing that a homeowner really needs to be aware of is if somebody comes knocking on your door telling you that you have damage to call your insurance company and they get your roof replaced, be very wary of that. What I always recommend is if you think you have damage, and you may or may not, is have a qualified roofer look at it first before you call your insurance company. Because if you call your insurance company and they send an adjuster out and they don't find any damage, it is still a claim on your insurance. Mm-hmm. And let's say in six or 8 months you get a really good windstorm and you do have damage. Now you have a second claim on your roof and you become high risk for the insurance company.
You know, you just reminded me of something, and we're going to take a quick break. And we're with Tim Mallory from Advantage Roofing Company. And if you have any issues that might be plaguing you, or you know that your roof is getting older and it's getting a little tired, and you have some questions about your roof, your ridge vents, your soffit vents, and so forth, Tim is the go-to guy. And certainly feel free to call in and give us a shout, and let's talk about it. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We'll be right back, and we will continue our conversations about roofs. Tim Mallory, the owner of Advantage Roofing, and we're talking about and various things like that that might be troubling you. I mean, hey, let's face it, all of us homeowners are at some point in time where it's going to come down to we need somebody that knows what they're doing to take care of our roofs. And I certainly was one of those guys, and I'm not a roofing specialist, so that's why I leave it up to people like Tim and Advantage Roofing. And Tim, will you give us your contact information and website information?
Yeah, both are real easy. It's 513-GO-ROOF-1, so it's Go Roof, and then the number one is our office, 513-GO-ROOF-1, and then our website is goroof1.com.
And their website is great. You know, you can go to it, you can get to everything, you can submit some information to get a hold of people. There's also what's really cool is you get there and you can kind of click on some of the things and it'll help explain a little bit, you know, which shingle to choose. And there's a lot of good information.
Very informational,
so
yes.
You can go to his website and you can get a lot of cool stuff from it.
Definitely. And, you know, that's where you start. And before we went into the break, we were just talking about some various things, working with insurance companies and adjusters and so forth. And I remembered one time I had a little wind damage around the eaves of my house with the siding.
Mm-hmm.
And the insurance adjuster, I mean, he didn't want to get up and look at it, at the roof and around the edge.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys, you know, they want to look at it from the ground.
Sure.
And they won't get up on the roof and look at it. And I think there's a huge advantage when somebody like yourself comes out and you're like, hey, I'm willing to get up there and tell you what it's all about. Do you find that as well?
Absolutely. So the thing we definitely recommend is, number one, have your roof inspected first by a quality roofer to see if you have enough damage, because you don't want to make a claim you don't have damage. The second thing you want to do is the homeowner needs to find a roofer they're comfortable with, and then that roofer needs to meet the adjuster out, and the adjuster and the roofer inspect and see how much damage is there, mm-hmm. and the roofer needs to kind of show the adjuster what he's also seeing as far as damage.
Right. You know, and Bob, you had a very interesting story, and this is something I think people should take heed to. You had some damage?
So I had some damage, and I was with one insurance company, and they came out, and they're like, hey, there's not enough damage. I was told there was. They said there wasn't, so you just need to fix a few things. So we fixed those few things, but apparently maybe I didn't fix them good enough, because I ended up switching insurance companies, combining all my car and everything just to save some money, however we all do. So then I also felt like I had some more damage. So mm-hmm. I kind of got up there. I was doing some Christmas lights, and I thought I saw some things. And so I called my insurance company. I'm like, hey, I'm not trying to get one over on you and get it. You know, I feel like there's some damage here. Sure, we might want to inspect and have it looked at. And because some of my neighbors were also having a lot of issues with their roof. And they denied my claim because they said I already had a previous claim with the other insurance company and I didn't fix that damage. So I didn't fix that damage. When you combine the new damage and that damage, they said I would have got a new roof.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't fix it. So yeah. I had to fix it.
Interesting.
Very interesting. So, you know, don't just, like, the good advice, don't, those guys knocking on doors or just trying to drum up business, not really caring about your roof. If you get that and you claim it on your insurance and then you do have some damage, it could be denied if you don't fix things the way you're supposed to.
And that's so important, too, because, you know, one thing leads to another. And as long as you allow those things to fester and continue to get worse, and you're more than likely see a lot more damage or experience a lot more damage. It's going to be more costly in the long run.
Yeah, but for a leak to get into the house, you know, it may be the roof may be leaking for 3 or 4 months into your attic space, soaking into your insulation, putting some rotted damage onto your plywood or rafters before you even see any traces of it on your ceiling inside. Mm-hmm. So you really need to be proactive if you see any signs of damage or anything going on.
Absolutely. Now, I have another question. Maybe our listeners are kind of thinking the same thing. Does the heat in the attic, just in the attic trapped itself, does that hurt the shingles over time as well?
It definitely does, yeah. So heat, there's all kinds of formulas, but basically you need to get that heat flowing out of your attic space. Otherwise, it kind of bakes the shingle from the underneath, and it prematurely ends the life of that roof.
Okay. All right. So heat in the attic. So getting extra heat out of the attic, not to mention will help your house, but it's also going to help your roof.
That is correct.
Well.
That is correct.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. So I'd always heard that. So I didn't feel like my attic was releasing the heat as quick as it should, because my upstairs was always so hot, being a two-story. Most people in Cincinnati in the summertime have the same issues.
Yes.
You know, your upstairs is warmer than your downstairs. I did add a power vent to suck some air out.
Mm-hmm.
It really seemed to help quite a bit, about 5 degrees.
Yeah, anytime you can get that, so you're just capturing heat up there. So anytime you can get that air moving out of that attic space, it's a great thing.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, I have a question, too. What is the black stuff that we usually see on our shingles, especially if you have light-colored shingles?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a mold of some sort, or is it...
Yeah, it's actually an airborne algae, and people kind of look at me like I have two heads when I tell them it's an algae and not a mold. But it's an airborne algae, and it was really prevalent on the East Coast, and it just kind of migrated into the Ohio Valley, and it's pretty much all over the country now. It kind of grows on the shadier sides sometimes, sometimes not. But what the shingle manufacturers have found on the East Coast, these roofs would get this heavy, heavy algae growth, except for where the old flashings were made of copper or zinc or some kind of heavy metal. The rain would hit those flashings and come down onto the shingle, and it would prohibit the algae from growing on that space. So what the shingle manufacturers do now is they coat the granules with copper or zinc or some kind of solution, and it prohibits that algae from growing.
So that's the key, right? Now, do all shingles have that for the most part or no?
For the most part, but it's not. It's just like anything else. You need to find a good quality shingle that puts a large amount of zinc and copper and coatings on those granules. Otherwise, they'll tell you that it works, you know, it'll keep algae from growing for 15 or 18 or 20 years. But some of the less expensive builder grade, like I talked to earlier, they, in 5 or 6 years, you start seeing streaks.
Yeah.
Another interesting, I have a big condo association that I work for that has asphalt roofing on theirs. And it's always interesting to make sure, and you had already mentioned it, get a quality roofer because the shingle is important. Because they put a poor shingle on top of these giant condos that are all one stories, and they have to replace the roof on like 15 units. The cost is astronomical because they used a poor quality shingle and it's not holding up at all, and the amount of money that everybody's being assessed to help pay for the roof is insane. Where if they would have used a quality material and talked to a quality roofer, that would have made a huge difference.
You know, and a lot of times that's price driven. You know, you get what you pay for, and all of a sudden, if you know, it's coming back and having to do it a second time, which is even going to be more costly.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. If you do it right the first time, you don't have to come back and do it a second. I mean, that's the old adage, you know.
I try to tell homeowners, at least initially, ignore price. Ignore price and just do a little bit of homework and look for quality, because if a roof is done right nowadays with these really good shingles, you don't have to worry about it for 30, 40, 50 years even.
Right.
But if you go with price, or if you go with a less expensive shingle that's saying, yes, we're going to last a long time, in 10 or 12 years, you're going to have to replace that roof. All of a sudden, that really inexpensive roof
costs you
twice as much.
That's like what you said earlier about getting that really good shingle that is going to hold up to the hail. Mm-hmm. You might spend $1,000. But if you're saving $100 a year on insurance, and it lasts say 30 years, which they'll last longer than that compared to your other shingles, it's actually cheaper.
Yes,
it saves you money.
Yeah.
So we always talk about being an educated consumer with plants on this show. We talk about it all the time, and roofs are no different.
Yeah, I agree.
Definitely. Keep that thought in mind, because when we come back, we're still going to continue our discussion, our topic on roofing, and I have a question about how advantageous are tear-offs versus leaving the old shingles on? And we'll talk about that when we come back out of the break. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. We'll be right back. And we're here with our good friend Tim Mallory, the owner of Advantage Roofing, and just talking about various things that will go on during the winter months, which is very hard on your roof, come to find out when we were talking with Tim a little bit ago about how the winter can wreak havoc on the asphalt shingles and so forth. And my question before we were going into the break was this. How advantageous and how important is it to tear off the old shingles when we do a new roof versus just leaving them on? Because Bob was talking about somebody they knows that had a couple of different layers.
Not a couple, five.
Which is not code, but yet a lot of weight on the trusses of the roof, you know, it's not good.
That's right. Yeah. No, it puts a lot of weight on it. We don't go over top of roofs anymore. So everything is now torn off all the way to the plywood. Plywood is inspected, repaired, and then we go back with the ice guard and the synthetic underlayment and the shingles. A couple reasons for that. Number one, the shingles last so long now that if there's any defect in that wood has to last another 50 years before anybody puts eyes on it again. So you got to make sure that it is sound and it'll hold a nail to it. And secondly, with the dimensional shingles, they have a continuous sealant strip on it. So if you go over top of another shingle, that causes unevenness, and that seal doesn't really adhere like it should, totally flat. So you really just need to take it off, inspect the wood, start over again.
Really doesn't save you much by putting it over top.
It doesn't. Just a little bit of labor cost. But
it doesn't save you. But what you think it saves in money, once again, it really doesn't.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I kind of liken it to, you know, a health checkup, so to speak. You know, you might look good externally, but inside, let's take a deeper look. Because I would certainly want to know underneath those shingles, what does that underlayment, or, you know, it's usually OSB board or it's plywood, what does it look like? Because I'm sure there are times you cut some of that out.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And there's times we're shocked that there's that much bad wood. So we'll go out and we'll look at a home and maybe even pop our head in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
But when we tear that roof off, all of a sudden there's 8 or 10 or 12 sheets of plywood that has to be replaced on it. Just walking on the roof, and sometimes even in the attic, you can't see that until you get those shingles off. So it's definitely, you know, it's like you're looking at the bones of your roof at that point.
When you're walking on a roof and sometimes you feel that give or that bounce, is that a good sign? Is that a bad sign? What can that mean?
It usually means nothing. So most plywood now is OSB board. It's called 7/16 OSB board. So that is going to give when anybody walks on a roof. Just, I mean, the trusses are usually 2 foot on center. So that's going to give a little bit. What you don't want to hear is cracking. If you hear cracking, it's probably an old plywood roof, and the glue in that plywood has failed, and the plywood layers, the laminate, is cracking in there. So you don't want to hear cracking, but giving is fine.
And is there a time during the course of the year it's not as it's not recommended to really be walking up around on the roof? I mean, I guess winter, obviously, because you don't want to slip. But are the asphalt shingles, are they more sensitive at various times of the year versus others?
They are, yeah. So wintertime, they get a little brittle, for sure. So if you're putting Christmas lights on, you
might have to put my Christmas lights on.
You really need to be careful with that. You know, they obviously can get a little slick with just a little bit of fog or dew or anything like that. But in the summertime, when it's really hot, you want to stay off of that, because when we talked about earlier, that granule adhering to the shingle, it's real easy to scuff that when it's hot and you got foot traffic on it. And what that granule does, it protects the underneath of the shingle from UV rays and breaking down that shingle. So once you take those granules off, that shingle is going to start breaking down quicker than it normally would from UV rays and exposure.
Got it. What about, I need to check this because sometimes I worry about this often. Your plumbing vents, there's a boot around that. Tell us a little bit about that boot, what can typically maybe happen, and what homeowners want to pay attention to.
Okay, yeah, that's a really good question. We see a lot of boot failures. So the boot is the stack coming up is a plumbing stack that kind of vents the sewer gases mm-hmm. up and out. There's a neoprene collar that goes around that, and it fits real tight to that PVC. Over time, that starts to break down, and it can crack and cause major leaks. Usually if you've got a leak in the bathroom area, that's the first thing we look at is that plumbing pipe stack coming up because it's probably got a crack in it, some kind of fracture, and water's getting into it.
That's happened to me before. I've done up, fixed them, and...
Is that an easy fix? Is it just caulking it, or can you slide that one off?
You slide that off, and you put a new replacement gasket on it. But the cool thing now is they've came out with this, they call it Everlast, or a lifetime plumbing pipe, mm-hmm. and it's... The old neoprene is about the thickness of a dime, so it's really thin neoprene. The new neoprene that they're using now on these is almost 3/4 inch thick. So once this one gets on there, you don't have to worry about it breaking down anymore. It's a little more expensive, but again, you kind of get what you pay for.
So my roof was put on by your company back in 2008.
Yes.
Should I maybe have you take a look at that?
No doubt about it. Yeah, we need to get back and take a look.
Let's do that because I want to make sure because... You know, it's really funny about leaks, especially when it comes to roofs. It may be leaking somewhere, but the way water travels and finds its way inside is totally, it's bizarre. It's not where you might think it may be.
It's amazing. Chasing down leaks in roofs can be difficult sometimes. Sometimes we got to get a garden hose up there, and we're putting the garden hose 12 feet away, and it's leaking in a different room than we're even standing over. So it's pretty amazing.
Interesting. Well, Tim, a great show as always. Give us your contact information, and also tell us a little bit about your special that you have going on.
Okay, great, yeah. So the contact information is really easy. It's just 513-GO-ROOF-1, so GOROOF, the number one, is the phone, and you can talk to Dawn in the office. And then our website is the same thing. It's www.GOROOF1.com. So both are pretty easy to remember.
And your special that you have going on?
Our special right now, we are doing what we call winter special. Just to keep our guys busy, we are giving a $750 off of the cost of the roof. So that'll go away probably sometime in the beginning of March because it really starts to get busy.
Right.
But for right now, February, we're giving $750 off. And it's a good time to get on a schedule. We don't necessarily have to put your roof on now, right, but get on that spring schedule.
Well, I definitely want you to check out my stacks, my plumbing stack vents. And I also have something I want you to check out for me down at the shop.
Okay.
And always a pleasure to have you in. And there you have it, folks. Tim Mallory, owner of Advantage Roofing. They've done stuff for me, and I didn't know they were in and out. It was that good. And have a great weekend, and when we come back out, we'll kind of conclude our show with maybe a little bit of Valentine's. Don't forget, guys, what do those colors of roses mean when you buy roses for your significant other? You better be on your game, and that's next Thursday. We'll be right back. And where does the time go, Bob?
Man, that was a quick 3 hours.
It's always a quick three hours.
It's just amazing how fast it is. But, you know, Valentine's Day coming up, you know, if you're gonna do flowers, what would you do?
Don't forget about your significant other, that's for sure. And you really want to surprise her or him, have those flowers delivered to their
But if I'm going to do red, what does that mean?
It means love.
Okay, and if it's yellow?
Enthusiasm, yellow, friendship.
So that would be a good one. Pink?
Elegance, you know, femininity, you know, just, you know, it's kind of friendship, too. Yep. I like you.
Yeah, and you don't have to do roses. Remember, you don't have to do roses. It's okay to do other flowers as well.
That's right, that's right. And, if you really want to get bold, guys, orange, that means desire. Be careful.
So orange roses means desire.
Desire.
Huh? You know, but there's so much going on. The sun's out. You know, there's so much coming up on the horizon that you and I are going to get into over the next few weeks. And, you know, if you've missed something of the show, remember you can download the B105 app and you can go back and listen to our podcast. You can get the podcast in a few days on our Facebook page. And, you know, go out to our Facebook page and like it, you know, and you can contact us, send us questions. If there's something you want us to talk about on a show.
That's a great way to stay in touch with us.
You know, if there's something out there, send us a question. If it's something we can talk about on the show and add to a couple weeks, we might do that.
Yeah,
so
you know,
send us something you want us to talk about over the future.
You're absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, Stephen Richardson had sent us a message a little bit ago. A Valentine's Day idea is about a succulent planter. We were talking about succulents this morning. That's a great idea. You know, that's what this show's all about, input. And certainly feel free to contact us that way. You know, what do you think are some hot buttons or good topics for 19? I mean, we're not far away from really digging.
Well, I'm excited to come up, and I can't wait to get, you know, into the show. We really start getting into all some of the new annuals that are coming out. You know, and some of my favorite annuals that I like to use.
Do you have a sleeper kind of an annual?
Yeah, but I'm not going to share it. They're going to have to stay tuned into the next few weeks. So, you know, there's some ones that I really like. But if I had to, you know, I don't want to tell people Angeloni or Vinca. Wait a minute.
Come on.
I just told two. No, but, you know, there's a couple out there. There's annuals that I love. There's, you know, some plants that I want to get into, some flowering shrubs I want to get into. Landscaping.
Well, I want you to get into it like an annual right now on the top of your head that maybe doesn't get as much merit that it deserves. I'll tell you one.
Yep.
For me, Streptocarpella.
Oh, there you go.
You know, I think that's a plant, an annual, that doesn't get as much as attention as
it
deserves.
Now, why don't you tell people what that is in the third grade form?
Well, Streptocarpella, it's an annual. It's also considered or sometimes called a false African violet.
There you go.
It's related to the violet.
Mm-hmm.
And we have one now that was left over from last season. It's huge in a hanging basket in the greenhouse, and it's blooming.
Yeah.
And a beautiful, beautiful specimen. Great for hanging baskets. A great plant to mix into your shade containers. A little bit of morning sun is perfect. What they do respond well to and favorably to, from a fertilization standpoint, as an African violet type of fertilizer.
They do. They do.
But that's one of my favorites. A couple of years ago, Bob, we had these huge, they were about 4 to 5 foot tall strawberry jars.
Yep.
Okay, and they were terracotta. They were huge, about the size of a whiskey barrel.
Yep.
And we planted that thing up with Streptocarpella, and that blue bloom, and it's very dainty the way it kind of dangles out and mm-hmm. hangs, trumpeted in shape, but with that terracotta look, it popped.
Absolutely.
All those pockets were filled with Streptocarpella.
See, and now my favorite I'd mention was, one of my favorites is Angelonia, because it comes in so many different colors. You get the dark purple, the light purple, the white, and the rose. They play well with a lot of other annuals, so you can mix them in a lot of baskets.
They play well in the sandbox together.
They do. They also play well with perennials. So if you've got some perennials where you have a few holes, like things have died off and you need to add a little color, that mm-hmm. really is interesting. They're known as the summer snapdragon, but they're not a snapdragon.
They kind of resemble it in
they
a way.
They do, but they're not. Another name for them is angel flower.
Mm-hmm.
They're easy to take care of, you know, especially when they're young. If you pick them a little bit and pinch them, they bush out a little bit more, so they get fuller. They really work well with vinca. With some petunias, some of the waves especially, anything that creeps because they're a little more vertical. They work great in planters, and they are incredibly drought resistant.
I think that's the key, and they are a summer performer. There's no doubt about it.
Early spring, they actually don't flower very well. When you first put them in, you might be disappointed.
Well, they're a little, it takes them a while to get ramped up,
yeah,
and it's the heat.
But when they get ramped up, they ramp up.
You know, there's some of the newer varieties that are kind of, they kind of just outwardly grow, kind of cascading. Have you seen some mm-hmm. of those?
Yep.
So you get a little bit different effect, because typically when I think of Angelonia, there's some various growing heights with various varieties.
Right.
And it really can serve as a well-planted, firmed filler
mm-hmm.
with your thriller and spiller and that type of a combination in your containers.
Right. I agree.
Some of those get a little taller, 18 inches or so. They could be a thriller.
There's
a number of things you can do with the Angelonia.
And I like being able to mix the colors. You can actually mix three of the colors in a collage, even in a large planting area. It's very interesting. You can usually, like, we'll grow it, and you can buy it with all the colors in a little mm-hmm. box, or you can buy the individual plant. So, you know, you can have some fun. So, but You know, coming up in other shows, there's so much to talk about. And I know you and I are really excited about what's coming and what our plans are for the upcoming shows.
There's a lot of stuff out there that we're definitely going to hone in on. And
we want them.
Guys, that's going to conclude our show for the day. The 3 hours have flown by. And don't forget, stay in touch with us on our Facebook page. If you want to send us an email, certainly do that in around the house at b105.com. And Bob and I will see you next Saturday. Have a great weekend.